live show is on in less than 1 minute.
Live! Live, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let's go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. Six, five, four, three, two, one.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area. You have entered a restricted broadcast.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show. America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
You betcha. Guy James here with you today. Thanks for joining us here in the Head On Radio Network. I'm happy to be with you today. And we have an interesting show for you today. We've got a couple of guests coming up. We've got Cindy Sheehan's going to be on to talk about her campaign in the 8th District of California coming up at the bottom of this hour. And in the next hour, we've got Representative Steve Kagan from Wisconsin is going to be on to talk about health care. So we have that to look forward to today while I sit here and shut off the ringer on my cell phone. Often forget that thing. Do you do that? Do you go in a restaurant or someplace and just plain forget to turn off your cell phone? Gosh, I do it all the time, and I shouldn't do that. Anyway, welcome to the program. We're very glad to have you along with us today. We've got lots of things we want to talk about. We'll talk a little bit about the war. We'll talk a little bit about the economy. We'll talk a little bit about politics, and hopefully you will join us at 866-546-5254. Before I go too far, I was remiss in mentioning it yesterday. I took a little trip over the weekend, Sunday and Monday, and went up to the Tampa area. We're about 120 miles south of that area here in the Fort Myers-Naples area. And just had an absolutely wonderful time. Visited the famous Columbia restaurant, the famous and wonderful Columbia restaurant, and had their and believe me, if you ever have a chance to go to any of the Columbia restaurants in Florida, their Spanish Cuban cuisine, out of this world, absolutely out of this world. They serve a salad called a 1905 salad. It's named that because that's the year the restaurant was founded. Oh, unbelievable. Just unbelievable. And they got one of my favorite dishes called ropa vieja. It's in Spanish that means old clothes. It's shredded beef with a sauce, and they serve it with rice and peas and the fried plantains. And Cuban bread. Oh, God. Life was pretty good for those couple of days. What a pleasure to sit into a wonderful restaurant with absolutely wonderful, interesting people. Great food. Life was pretty good for those couple of days, all except for my not packing everything I needed. But I had a great time, and many, many, many thanks to my host. Many thanks. Wonderful, wonderful time up there. We got the debate tonight. Oh, yes. This could turn the corner for somebody in Pennsylvania. And we'll talk about the polls in just a little bit, but we see Hillary's ahead despite what Overman said, and we'll talk about that a little bit. Hillary's ahead a little bit in Pennsylvania. I don't know. I don't know how it's going to turn out, but we have a debate tonight. It should be interesting. There may be some fireworks. I hope they discuss the issues. You know, the trouble is with a debate between those two, there really can't be any fireworks, really, except for personal things, because when it comes right down to it on the issues, there's not a lot of difference. Not a lot. I mean, I understand there's some, but not a huge chasm between the two on their differences, political differences. I see Bruce Springsteen endorsed Obama. Now, that's fine. Everybody can endorse whoever they want to, but is that news? Well, I guess it is because I just mentioned it, but do I care if the boss, and I love his music, love it, do I care who he's endorsed politically? No. Hell no. I really don't care at all. Did you watch Tweety Bird Matthews last evening? I'm really getting sick of him a lot. I read an interesting story on the guy the other day. He must be the most insecure man on the planet. Turns out he is very envious of Russert, and he's very envious of Keith Olbermann, and he's a very insecure guy from reading the story. Rich guy. But I watched him just to see how much he'd fawn over McCain last night, because you know how he talks about McCain, and I wasn't disappointed. The Tweety Bird Matthews McCain man love thing was there, all right. Now, I'll bet Chris had that tingling up his leg feeling that he's spoken about before. Who was it? I think he was saying that when he heard an Obama speech one time. He said, "I had a tingling up my leg." I just found that an interesting comment. It was clear for anyone with eyes or ears to understand that Matthews has a real thing for McCain. He really does. He sees him as macho, macho man. And Matthews isn't the only member of the media to show his loyalty and love for John Sidney McCain. He gets the benefit of the doubt every time with the media. It was exactly what I expected. I see currently the market is up 202 points, 202 points, all the way up to 12,565. Oil is up to $114.23 a barrel. Now, explain to me, I'm not an economist. I try my best to keep up, and yeah, I took the normal econ classes in high school and college and so forth, but certainly no top-notch economist am I. But explain to me how the market goes up today by 200 points, or any day for that matter, when oil keeps going up and the dollar hits an all-time low today against the euro. Terrible news. Absolutely terrible news on both counts. And yet the market goes up. I think it just shows, in my opinion, this is illustrating the disconnect between the haves and the have-nots. The people that play the market are the big money people, by and large, except for some funds that the small guys can get involved in. But by and large, it's the big guys that get involved in the stock market. And it's going up, up, and up. And oil's going on up, up, and up. Inflation's going up and up. Gold's been up. All the signs that would show that we've got a really bad economy are there, except how does the market go up by a couple of hundred points when all these other stories are coming out? I don't really understand. I try my best to understand that, and I really do not. We'll talk a little bit more about the economy a little bit later on today. I did want to mention Tim Robbins. You all are aware that Tim Robbins, when this war started, was vilified in the media, particularly by the Limbaughs and the Hannitys and that goofy Laura Ingraham and Savage and all of them. You know, the chorus of right-wing harpies. Let's Oh, and the man Coulter was in on it too, speaking of harpies. And they vilified Tim Robbins in a big, big way because of his stance against the war. So yesterday or day before, I don't know which for sure, Jim Robbins was invited to speak at the annual National Association of Broadcasters meeting. Yes, of all people. And to his great credit, this is the opening of his speech. And I'm going to play it to take a couple of minutes, but talk about getting back at somebody. Talk about driving a stake in the heart of the political Draculas on the right-wing radio. Listen to this opening of Tim Robbins' speech in front of the National Association of Broadcasters.
Hello. I'm Tim Robbins. I'd like to thank you for the invitation to address you here at the National Association of Broadcasters. When I first received the invitation, I was a little confused because the last time I had contact with the national media, I seemed to remember them telling me to shut the hell up. I'd like to start with an apology to Rush and Sean and Bill and Savage and Laura, what's her name? A few years ago, they told America that because I had different opinions on the wisdom of going to war, that I was a traitor, a Saddam lover, a terrorist supporter. I was undermining the troops. I was appealing at the time for the inspectors to have a little bit more time to find these weapons of mass destruction. I was a naive dupe of left-wing appeasement, and how right they were. If I had known then what I know now, if I had seen the festive and appreciative faces on the streets of Baghdad today, if I had known then what a robust economy we would be in, the unity of our people, the wildfire of democracy that is spread across the Mideast, I would never have said those traitorous, unfounded, and irresponsible things. I stand chastened in the face of the wisdom of the talk radio geniuses, and I apologize for standing in the way of freedom. So when they asked me to come speak to you, I said, "Are you sure, me?" And they said, "Yes." And I said, "You know, I have a tendency to say things that I believe at the time to be well-intentioned, but that are actually traitors." And they said, "Sure, cool." And then I read the press release, and it said Mr. Robbins would be speaking about the challenges of new media and delivery systems. Oh, okay. I just want you to know, I'm not sure I know what that fucking means.
Tim Robbins in front of the National Association of Broadcasters dinner. I was proud of him for that. That was a well-thought-out speech. The whole thing is good, but the opening is particularly good, and I thought he did a great job of sticking it to the Limbaughs and Hannitys and Savages and O'Reillys and Laurie Ingrams and people of the world. They did indeed besmirch his reputation. They did indeed call him a traitor and a liar and, you know, accused him of everything they possibly could. You know how it goes with them. Don't you dare say anything against our Republican president or you're a damn traitor. Treason! Sedition Act, Savage was saying constantly at the time. Well, speaking of Savage, did you hear this from Savage?
That's the problem, is why I'm not too excited about the election. I'm really not excited. The only one I don't want to win is Obama, because I know he's a Marxist in his heart. He's an Afro-Leninist, and I know he's dangerous. Hillary, I know what to expect from her.
An Afro-Leninist, a Marxist. Where does Savage get these? Is he the one that coined the term the ethno-Islamo-terrorist, Islamo-fascism and all that? Maybe he coins all these phrases. African, Afro-Marxist, or Marxism. I tell you, I don't know where they get these loonies. How can it be that this guy, this Mike Savage, and isn't it a sad testament to the condition of society in the United States of America. I mean, they can talk about Hollywood all they want to, and the impression that Hollywood leaves with people and the decadence and all that that takes place in Hollywood. And I agree with much of that. I think Hollywood's way overblown, way overdone, and all this star and fame thing and all that, it escapes me. It really does. But also, you have to put in that category, as long as he's bitching about it, you have to put category in this, or Savage in the same category, the people that he's bitching about. He's a star. He's a big media star. And he's a freaking lunatic. He gets on the air and says things to millions of people who, by the way, are purposefully tuned into him to hear the wisdom of this man's words. And it's obvious that he's, as we used to say, a brick shy of a load. His elevator doesn't go all the way to the top, and all those euphemisms that you can think of, and I know we've got a million of them, but it's obvious the man isn't quite all there. Or else he's one of the greatest actors that ever lived. One or the other. Either way, I don't get it. I do not get it. What possesses people to listen to a Mike Savage? Now, here he is riding the fence in the election. He goes on in that piece to talk about how Hillary wouldn't be so bad because she's an elitist now. She's a rich elitist now, and he knows what to expect from her. But Obama, an Afro-Marxist. Come on. I thought that those days were gone. I thought those days of Commie Pinko, you remember, people my age remember that. Back in the day, if you wanted to besmirch somebody's reputation, you wanted to disparage them, you call them a Pinko Commie. Everybody who wasn't liked in the political, wow, they're a Commie, Pinko. We have our beloved Senator McCarthy to thank for a lot of that. But what's wrong with people? What is wrong with people? You know, they can complain about Hollywood all they want to, but you take your Limbaugh and you take your Neil Bortz, another actor on the radio, another flaming lunatic. You just have to wonder. You do have to wonder what's wrong with these people. Well, enough about them. 866-546-5254. Did you watch Tweety Bird Matthews last evening? I did, and of course, during his bout of fawning over McCain, I went to the audience for questions at Villanova University, a very prestigious university and a great one. Always have a great basketball program there. To be frank, I really don't know a lot about their about the merits of their degrees, but I'm sure it's a very fine university. And one of the people that came up and asked the questions of McCain last night, he was Fox News anchor son, that, what's that idiot's name? Steve Doocy. And the moment this kid stepped up to the microphone, I turned to my wife and I said, that's got to be a relative of that Steve Doocy. He looked just every bit as goofy as his father. And you have to admit, his father is pretty damn goofy looking. And the kid gets up, and I'm sure the reason they let him up at the microphone, because he was Doocy's son. And he asked John McCain why Hillary Clinton recently took a shot of whiskey. Said, do you think she's finally resorted to hitting the sauce just because of some unfavorable polling? Ha, 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 ha. But it was a setup, and everybody knows it. There were several thousand people in the arena, and that kid happens to get to the microphone. Well, I would have been embarrassed had I been his father. Nonetheless, many of these people seem to be way above being embarrassed, way beyond it. And wasn't Senator Vitter lucky yesterday? The D.C. madam got convicted, and Her lawyer didn't call Vitter to the stand because his lawyer had told them that he was going to be an uncooperative witness, would plead the fifth, and the D.C. Madam's lawyer thought, well, that won't be good for our case, and he ends up losing it anyway. And so Vitter doesn't get called to the stand. And I have to admit, I was very disappointed over that. I really was. It's really too bad. I was looking forward to hearing all about the United States Senator's fetish with diapers and leather masks and such. I really was. It's no secret in New Orleans. It's no secret in Washington. But I was just hoping it would hit the national news, but maybe they wouldn't have talked that much about it anyway. We spoke yesterday about the McCain campaign website. On their site, having at least three McCain, well, many, and more than three, but at least three of the McCain family recipes on the section of the senator's presidential campaign site were word-for-word copies of recipes on the Food Network's site. And now the McCain campaign has already taken down the recipes and is branding the affair a low-level, unpaid staff debacle. The web intern in question has reportedly been swiftly dealt with. So I don't want to leave the impression with anybody, and I don't want to be unfair here, that we were unfairly criticizing Cindy McCain, because such is not the case. It was an unpaid staffer, and I think it was probably true that Cindy probably never has been in a kitchen, and that was all something that a staffer did. Cindy McCain would never do such a thing. Well, we are, 21 after the hour. We are going to pause for a quick break, and we'll be back in just a moment or two.
Here's the guy changing the way you hear music, Billy Shears.
Sounds every Saturday night, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern. You'll hear the latest in new music releases, special segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications with the sassy and classy Erica Richards. For requests and dedications, direct your email to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. So tune in and stop by the chat room this Saturday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Thanks for lending an ear.
Hello, Ralph Nader. We are anonymous. Over the years, we have been watching you, your campaigns, your dissent, your litigious nature. You gave us OSHA and the EPA and seatbelts. We freaking love seatbelts. When you ran in 2000, it seemed like a pretty cool idea. A chance for a third party. Some of us got behind you. I don't remember. How did it turn out? Oh, that's right. It kind of sucked. That's not really your fault. Those bastards were probably going to steal it anyway. Your fans felt embarrassed. We went underground. We became anonymous. We told ourselves that the lesser of two evils would have still been evil, or some horse shit like that. But Ralph, if you run this time, you can stick those seat belts where the minimum wage don't shine. No, seriously, don't even. And it's not that bad. Doesn't Obama make you cry sometimes? He totally makes us cry sometimes. But maybe that's the lesson of 2000. Vote strategically and practically, not as an expression of emotion or high-minded principle. But still, Obama totally makes us cry sometimes. Anywho, keep speaking your mind. You have a lot to be proud of. But, regarding the campaign, here are your laurels. Why don't you lie down on them and take a goddamn nap for once? We are anonymous. We are legion. We do not forget. Expect us not to lift a finger to help you out. I'm some dude you never heard of, and I approve this message.
And we're back here in the Guy James Show. Coming up in just a few minutes, we've got Cindy Sheehan going to be our guest today. She's going to talk about her campaign to unseat the... had my attention taken away here for a moment. The official Guy James Show Yorkies went walking through the studio, and they are a sight indeed. Anyway, as I was mentioned, Cindy Sheehan's going to be having a campaign in the 8th District of San Francisco against Nancy Pelosi. And so we'll have Cindy coming up in just a couple of minutes, so don't go away. It's always a pleasure to hear from Cindy Sheehan. Very, very interesting woman, that's for sure. Been through a lot. It's amazing to have seen over the years how Cindy has grown. I can't even remember what year it was we went out to visit, and we'll talk with her about that, out to Crawford, Texas at the Peace House and all that. I don't know if that was, 3 years ago, 4 years ago? I can't even remember. Time's getting away. It's certainly getting away. Amazing how fast it goes. We will pause for a break right now, and while we get our guest on the phone, and we'll be back ever so shortly.
Station wagon laying foundations on the shadows of overpassing plains. Well, I'm feeling good. 7 o'clock, we're gonna drive up the county line. Find Saturday night like an orphan child with the good days left behind. Well, I'm not sure we can stay.
Back with you here on the Guy James Show, and as promised, we've got a friend of the show and somebody we've known for a long time on the program today, and who's making news once again, Cindy Sheehan. Cindy, welcome to the program.
Oh, it's great to be on again, Guy. Thank you.
It's been a while since we've talked, and we've talked a couple of times since we were meeting out at Crawford. For those of you that weren't in on the conversation, I was just asking Cindy, what year was it that we were out in Crawford? It was 2005. What was it? Prairie Chapel Road, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, I'll never forget the sight of the gathering out there, the crosses along the road. The ditches, everything up the road, the Secret Service.
Fire ants, the snakes, the Republicans. Yeah, it was quite a summer.
Oh, I was just reminded the other day of that brave soul Mike Gallagher when he came out there with his bullhorn and harassed people. And I do remember sitting in the shade under the trees at the Peace House there on a picnic table interviewing you out there that day. It was a gentleman running the Peace House was cooking a great big huge pot of soup. I remember that very well. But time's gone by, and you've come a long way since Crawford, Texas, and we wanted to talk to you today about your candidacy for the United States Congress. It's the 8th district, isn't it?
Right, the 8th district in California, which is entirely contained in the city of San Francisco.
And there's what, one little piece of San Francisco that's left out of it, southwest or
right, that's in the district that Tom Lantos was a representative for before he passed away.
Okay, and we certainly heard from the new representative from there recently. She got up and gave a fiery speech in Congress, which I appreciated very much. And, of course, your opponent is somebody that everybody knows, right?
Well, I think that a lot of people know her, yeah. You know that a lot of times the average American isn't too up on politics, but I think people listening to your show certainly know that Nancy Pelosi is the Speaker of the House and the representative to San Francisco, and I think she has, first of all, you know, I've heard since I've been on the ground there in San Francisco full-time and consistently that she does not have a lot of support there in that town. Even before she became Speaker, you know, people there realize that she just represented the special interests and not really the soul or the spirit of San Francisco. And since she's become Speaker of the House, when she became prominent to many Americans, you know, it's been a failed policy. All she has done is go along with the Bush regime and their policies of war, of torture, of economic ruin, and it seems to be all to enrich their cronies. And, you know, even though they claim to be on different sides of the aisle, one's a Republican, one's a Democrat, you know, it seems like their policies have been intricately woven since she's become Speaker of the House.
Well, it's no secret that many, many people on the left have been sorely disappointed. Right off the bat, upon becoming Speaker, it was pretty much declared that impeachment was off the table. It was pretty much...
Well, she actually said that the day before the election.
The day before.
You know, that's the first time we heard the famous impeachment's off the table rhetoric was the day before she became Speaker.
Have you changed your mind about it?
About impeachment?
Yeah.
Well, no, I think that is something that's very urgent to heal our nation and heal our world. And, you know, I'm realistic about it. I don't think it's going to happen, but I think it's something that really needs to happen. And in San Francisco, we're putting together a resolution, a coalition of people, Cindy for Congress included, to put it on the ballot for November to have George Bush indicted in San Francisco following the model of Brattleboro, Vermont. And I think that's where we have to go now. Our communities have to gather together and say that these war criminals are not welcome in our community. And I think that will confine them to, you know, smaller and smaller areas and prisons of their own making. And, you know, if the international community won't step in and haul them off to the Hague for war crimes, and if our Congress won't do their constitutionally mandated duty, then it's up to us people to hold these people accountable. You know, no American president, and many American presidents have ordered, sanctioned, and presided over crimes against humanity, and they have not been held accountable for it. And, you know, I'm not, like, anti-American president, but I'm anti-war criminal, and I think when war crimes are committed anywhere in the world, that these people have to be held accountable.
Well, at least let's look to the future. As you say, it's probably not going to happen, but as a practical matter. But let's just everybody forget for a moment, even George Bush. This gives a license for presidents in the future to go ahead with even worse things. And
well, absolutely, and not holding people like Harry Truman for using weapons of mass destruction, or Johnson or Nixon or Bill Clinton for immoral wars of aggression. Not holding them accountable has given free rein to George Bush. And the next president needs to know whoever he or she is, that the American people are not going to stand by and let this stuff happen again. And, you know, we have to be realistic. We have to be intellectually honest with ourselves to know that Democrats also, you know, do things that are unconstitutional. And if we, you know, loyalty to humanity, loyalty to the future, loyalty to the children around the world demands that we hold these people accountable and hold them responsible and make sure that these crimes aren't committed again.
Cindy,
and so maybe if it had happened, you know, my son might be alive, and not only Casey, but hundreds of thousands of other people who have been killed in, you know, these illegal and immoral occupations of Iraq and Afghanistan.
And certainly hundreds of thousands of more in the future. Seems like at times there's just no end to man's inhumanity toward men. Cindy, it's an awesome thing to do, to run for the United States Congress. And how did you walk us through it for a minute? How did you come to your decision, and what was the final straw that made you jump into the race?
Well, I had never even considered it. I have been courted by the Green Party to run for president on the Green Party ticket. I had been, you know, the Progressive Democrats of America. You know, there were several districts that they thought that I could be dropped into to run, and I never considered even running for public office. But when Nancy Pelosi gave George Bush more money to wage the war, it was in May, and she gave him like $120 billion more. You can't say you're against the war and fund the war simultaneously. You know, it's not legal, and it's not even... it doesn't make any kind of common sense. And so I left the Democratic Party. And then I left the peace movement altogether because, you know, not only was I being attacked by the right, but I was being attacked by, you know, people on the left. And, you know, I just thought that I didn't have any more to give. But then towards the end of June, George Bush commuted Scooter Libby's sentence. And that is a prerogative of the president to do that, to pardon people, to commute their sentences. But there was a lot of proof that George Bush was complicit. At least his office was complicit in outing Valerie Plame, you know, for which Scooter Libby was convicted. And so, of course, Congress didn't do anything about it. So I just said I was in Crawford, my property that I had just sold to Free Walker. We had like a goodbye celebration and a 50th birthday party for me. And I decided that if Nancy Pelosi didn't put impeachment back on the table, that I would run against her. And we started a journey for humanity from Crawford to Washington, D.C., and we arrived in Washington, D.C. on July 23rd. We took a petition with almost 1 million signatures to impeach George Bush. We took a petition with over 100,000 signatures to impeach Dick Cheney. 400 people lined the halls around John Conyers' office. 40 of us were arrested in his office, and he still said he couldn't impeach George Bush. So that's when I decided to run against Nancy Pelosi, because she's a major obstacle to accountability. She's a major obstacle to peace, and I don't believe that it is her right to take any part of our Constitution off the table. When the Democrats came back into power, they should have tried to restore some kind of rule of law, not to be complicit in George Bush's crimes. So that's when I decided to run against
That's her. Certainly what we were expecting. We didn't get what we expected. Elections are supposed to have consequences, and I'm afraid this one didn't have
right.
very much of a consequence.
Well, you know, Guy, when I went to Crawford the first time, I wanted to know an answer to the question, what noble cause did my son die for, and what noble cause are people dying for every day in Iraq? And the media wouldn't ask George Bush that question, so I thought, what's wrong with me? I have a voice. I'm going to go down there and ask that question. And we can't just sit around and complain. You know, 81% of America is not satisfied with the direction our country's going in. So if we're not satisfied with that direction, we just don't sit in the passenger seat and complain about it. You know, we get in the driver's seat and try to do something about
sure.
it. And I just am what, you know, well, you know, I'm not going to sit here anymore and complain about Nancy Pelosi or complain about the complicity of the Democrats. I'm going to actually try and do something about it.
You mentioned Valerie Plame a few minutes ago and the situation that happened with her. You have to feel some sort of a camaraderie in as much as you have suffered the being ostracized by people. You have suffered by having your reputation and your person besmirched by radio personalities. But you do identify with that, don't you?
I do, and I actually was on the panel with Joe Wilson on June 16th of 2005 when we testified for John Conyers in the Downing Street memo hearing. So it is quite a thing when you stand up for what's the truth and what's right, and you stand up to the power, and, you know, somebody like Valerie Plame who gave her, you know, her talents and her life to the United States of America, someone like me who had to sacrifice the sun, and that these people can demonize us, you know, even though we're just standing up for the truth is, you know, just doesn't make sense to me.
It's a rough situation, and I know you've been through it, and I know Valerie and Joe have been through it, and it's something that's always going to go on, but I know for quite a while they worked hard on you, but I'm so happy that your resilience came through and you've decided to jump in this race. How is it going so far?
Well, we've been, like I said, on the ground since October, and we've opened an office. We've been consolidating our support there in San Francisco. We don't have to run in the primary, so.
That'll help with the money situation.
Yeah, we're running in November. Well, the money, it's, you know, we've been able to stay afloat, but, you know, Nancy Pelosi, in her last disclosure, had $1.6 million.
Oh.
You know, we can't compete with that. But if people want to help, they can go to cindyforcongress.org. It's cindyforcongress.org and donate. You know, we've collected just grassroots donations, and our average donation is about $60, and anything helps.
Absolutely, and you can win an election and still be outspent. There's a lot of people that have proven that over the years, and there's a lot of people that have gone to Congress with a cause. And you've got a cause that you know a tremendous number of American people are behind you. As you mentioned, 81% of the people are against this war.
We just have to prove in this district, and this is the district to do it in, that people power can beat money. And we have so many committed volunteers and people who are committed to the same cause as we are. And I truly believe, like you said, I'm the underdog, but it's a great position to be in. And I do think that we are going to go down in history as beating, like, one of the richest people in Congress.
Yes, yes, indeed. And, you know, if anybody can do it, you can do it. I'm very proud of what you've done. I'm very proud of what you've stood for these past few years, and I think most of America is. The detractors and all those people haven't hurt your spirit, haven't been able to keep you down, and I'm just very, very, very proud of you for that.
Thank you. You know, I want to make my son's sacrifice count for something, and I really want to transform this country into the country that people say Casey died for, and I'm having one of my daughters is having a baby next month,
so
I have a grandchild that we have to fight for, and, you know, I've gone from fighting for my kids to fighting for all the children in the world, and I think it's just, you know, an extremely important path to be on.
Well, it's the best reason in the world to run for office, and Congress should be full of people like you. They should be full of people who are grassroots, ordinary Americans, instead of the rich and powerful. And you certainly stand up for that. Cindy, I want to thank you so much for being on the program.
It was great to talk to you. I hope I can be on again. And
absolutely.
We'll keep you guys posted on the campaign.
All right. And once again, everybody, that's cindyforcongress.org. Be sure and get on over there. Cindy,
thanks
again.
Guys.
Yeah. Bye-bye. What a sweet woman she is. She is one of those people that when you're talking to her, I remember so well sitting there at the picnic table in the shade of the Peace House on a hot summer day. I think it was August, I'm not sure, but it was hot. And you could see the passion in her eyes for what she was doing. You could see that she meant it. You could see that she had been hurt to the depths of her soul by the death of her son, and she was going to make that death count for something instead of being absolutely needless. As they always say, there's a silver lining to every cloud, and that's what she was going to do with it. And for those of you that never saw it, what she started out in Crawford, Texas was, and everybody that was there, and I know some of you were there as well, it was about, I don't know, 4 or 5 miles out of town on that Prairie Chapel Road, and all of a sudden you came to a fork in the road and this little island in the middle. And anyway, on the left side coming out of town, there were those crosses lined up along the road. And that's when it hit you, right in the face. Just hit you right in the face when you saw all those crosses there. And of course, there are many, many, many more now. Many more. And I remember so well that right after I was there, somebody went in through and mowed him down with a pickup truck, and he was caught and arrested and prosecuted for it. But it was just up the road from George Bush's home, and the Secret Service were guarding that part of the road, so you couldn't even get up to George Bush's ranch. But there were oh so many people there, people that were dedicated to the cause of peace, people were dedicated to doing something about the war, to doing something about the illegality of it, to doing something about the illegal actions of George W. Bush. And although nothing really has legally happened to the people that started this immoral occupation of Iraq, and I've been reminded a couple of times lately that it is an occupation, it's not a war, it's an occupation, I was so very proud of those people that stood out there along the road in the heat. There were sheriff's deputies all up and down the road. It was an orderly thing. It was a peaceful thing. And up at the Peace House in the little town of Crawford, Texas. A little house two or three doors down from the railroad tracks by the big grain elevator. Big rock garden outside and people manning the phones and people cooking for everybody, making soup. It was a wonderful experience for me, one I shall never forget. But moreover, the most important part of it for me, besides realizing the gravity of the situation and just how important this little movement was and how big it would become, Cindy made some noise that summer, a lot of noise, and the press paid great attention, and I think you can credit Cindy Sheehan and that movement in Crawford, Texas, for helping to turn the tide, at least on American opinion. And although most of we Americans haven't had the fortitude of a Cindy Sheehan to do all that she has done, I think if we had, maybe we would have forced this thing to an end. But she's been dedicated to that cause, and like she said, she wants the death of Casey to stand for something. And what better thing to stand for than his mother going to Congress and trying to put the nation back on the right track again. I can't think of a better legacy to leave than that. But a very strong woman, a very pleasant woman. I don't know of anybody that's been around Cindy that just didn't love her. So anyway, we're happy to have had her on the program today. Once again, CindyForCongress.org. I know everybody's tapping you for money this year in this election season, but if you can possibly help Cindy out for Congress, please do. CindyForCongress.org. She's got a nice site there. Very nice picture of her standing in front of her headquarters out in San Francisco. And we want to wish her the very best, just the very best with that. And I hope she'll be able to raise the money necessary to do what it is she needs to do. Mentioned earlier about polls And our friend Gerilyn over at Talk Left was talking about this. Said, I caught the intro to Countdown with Keith Olbermann. And I personally don't know what the hell is going on TV with everybody all of a sudden. I guess they want to be with the winner, I guess. That's the only thing I can understand about it. Anyway, Keith Olbermann, who has disappointed me, not because he has backed Obama, not because that at all, and I don't know that he's ever officially said that. In fact, I'm sure he is not. But he has joined the chorus of anti-Hillary Clinton, and I don't like that. I think I've tried to remain fair, and I think all of us should have remained fair throughout this whole thing. And I know some of you disagree with me, but that's how I feel about it. And I think Keith has definitely taken a leap along with Matthews and everybody else to jump on Hillary Clinton as much as possible, along with Rachel Maddow and some other people. But Olbermann was announcing that Obama's ahead in Indiana and Hillary's lead in Pennsylvania is gone. And Gerilyn said, I changed the channel. Is it too much to ask that cable news and talk show hosts like Olbermann at least fairly report the news before they put their spin on it? How could he not mention the multiple dueling polls? So Gerilyn goes on to say, starting yesterday, Big Tent Democrat and I cataloged every poll other than the Daily Tractors in the states yet to vote regardless of results. We didn't cherry pick and report only those we agree with or that favor one candidate or the other. And here are the examples. The LA Times Bloomberg poll on Pennsylvania, Indiana, and North Carolina. In Pennsylvania, Hillary up by 5. Indiana, Obama up by 5. And North Carolina, Obama up by 13. In Survey USA in Kentucky, Clinton up by 36 points. No surprise there. Survey USA in Pennsylvania, Clinton up by 14 points. The Quinnipiac and Rasmussen in Pennsylvania, Clinton up by 6 and 9 points, respectively. Survey USA Indiana, Clinton up by 16. Public policy polling, North Carolina, Obama up by 18. Rasmussen on Bittergate, 56% disagree with Obama's remarks. And the Susquehanna University, PA on Pennsylvania, Clinton up by 3. American Research Group, Pennsylvania, Clinton up by 20. I kind of doubt that one. That, you know, and as Gerilyn said, that a cable news network can't do the same, even on an opinionated news talk show, is really pathetic. It really is. And I don't understand why we just can't all be fair about this. To report just the group of polls that pushes this in the direction you want it to go, that's not only doing a disservice to the candidate, that's doing a disservice to your listeners. It absolutely is. That's taking your listeners for fools. And anybody that does that doesn't deserve the audience they have. That's my humble opinion. But I feel strongly about it, and I feel very strongly that the press has not been fair in all this. Well, this first hour is dancing by really fast today. Quickly go through it, since yesterday was tax day and everybody's... well, I won't start on it. I'll wait till after the top of the hour for that. A little bit longer than that. I did see that we've had another bad photo lineup, another wrongful conviction. Out in Texas, wouldn't you know, that this gentleman, Thomas McGowan, is expected to be released from prison tomorrow in Texas after serving 23 years for a rape he didn't commit. McGowan was convicted in Dallas, where else, where 14 people, get this, 14 people have already been exonerated by DNA evidence, more than any other county in all but 3 states. I told you I had a thing for Texas. 12 of those Dallas exonerations involved an eyewitness misidentification, often with an improper lineup procedure, as in McGowan's case. When he was arrested in 1985, he was in his mid-20s, a high school graduate. He was the victim was shown a photo array with seven photos, but there were effectively only three photos in the array, since two of them were photocopies of photographs. One was a black and white photo, all the rest were in color, and one was marked Garland Police Department, and three were marked Richardson Police Department, which is where the crime took place. And McGowan's photo was on record from a traffic violation. The victim in this case told the officer conducting the lineup that she thought McGowan was the perpetrator. You have to be sure, yes or no, she was told, and after hearing those instructions, she said McGowan was definitely the perpetrator. And here we are 23 years later. He had been sentenced to two life terms in prison. Spent 23 years, the majority of his life so far, in prison for a crime he did not commit. And we already know that at least 14 others in Dallas have been exonerated by DNA evidence. His people should be ashamed. It's not a problem unique to Dallas, Texas, but as you all know, the justice system in Texas, well, it leaves something to be desired. Their penchant for the death penalty, and Junior Bush's penchant for the death penalty, and his mocking people who were going to be executed, and the Alberto Gonzalez going through the cases of people in Texas, that doesn't leave you a lot of confidence, does it? Alberto Gonzalez advising the governor of Texas at the time, Junior Bush, on whether or not somebody ought to have their sentence reduced or whatever. Alberto Gonzalez, the consummate liar, advising the governor of a state on whether or not somebody ought to be executed or not. That's a lot of confidence right there. What a guy, Alberto Gonzalez, the unemployed Alberto Gonzalez. Well, I think we know where all that thing headed, and I think we know what kind of an administration we have. Alberto Gonzalez was certainly a symptom, just a symptom of the disease that has overtaken the government of the United States during the Bush administration over the last seven and nearly one half years. Well, we're going to pause for news at the top of the hour. We are going to have Congressman Steve Kagan with us after the top of the hour, fairly shortly after. So I want you all to hang on about that. We're going to talk about health care a little while. So we'll be back.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
On Monday, the Building and Construction Trades Department of the AFL-CIO kicked off its 100th anniversary at its 2008 legislative conference. In an opening speech, President Mark Ayers denounced Republican presidential candidate John McCain and said Democratic presidential candidates Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton understand working Americans.
They know that America needs a viable and prosperous middle class. They know the crucial roles that our unions play in building and sustaining good jobs. They understand that liberty and justice for all must include the liberty to join unions and to collectively bargain for economic justice.
Also speaking at the opening event was Pennsylvania Senator Bob Casey, who said that as the job landscape changes, Congress needs to make sure union jobs are protected.
When we chart a new course on climate change, on protecting our environment, on creating green jobs, we're going to make sure that as those debates are occurring, that we protect union jobs, that we protect the workers who are in building trades on those projects.
Can U.S. auto workers turn the industry's labor concessions trend around and make real progress again for auto workers? Bill Parker, president of UAW Local 1700 at Chrysler, thinks it's possible, even with the radical restructuring underway in the U.S. auto industry.
I think much of the struggle down the road is going to be to reestablish parity as steps towards, you know, complete unity and solidarity in membership.
Parker opposed the concessions at Chrysler, calling them a retreat of historic proportions for the UAW. He says concessions don't save jobs, make unions weaker, and paying new hires half of what current auto workers make permanently divides union membership. So what does the future hold for American auto workers?
I think one of the tasks of the union looking down the road is to figure out creative ways to use the new structuring of the industry to benefit us. And my view is that even in the worst of times that we've gone through, that it's always been possible to challenge the company, and that's our job.
Here is today's economic report. Bank repossessions of homes have jumped a mind-boggling 129% since 1 year ago, according to RealtyTrack. Foreclosure filings alone leapt 57% since March of 2007. The organization projects that the final two quarters of the year will likely see a record-setting number of foreclosed properties. One in 538 single-family U.S. households received a foreclosure notice in March. Nevada continues to see the most foreclosures in comparison to any other state. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
If you don't clean up your room, the Board of Health is going to condemn it.
The Board of Health doesn't even know about your room. What's more, they don't care.
You know, if you keep making that face, it's going to freeze that way.
Not unless you're someplace really, really cold. Actually, a lot of the warnings moms hand out are a bit exaggerated.
If you don't get your blood pressure checked, you could have high blood pressure, not even know it, and you could die from a stroke.
But she's right about that one. Fact is, high blood pressure contributes to 200,000 American deaths each year. And a third of those who have high blood pressure don't know it. If they did, it'd be simple to treat. Call the American Heart Association at 1-800-AHA-USA1 or visit AmericanHeart.org on the web to learn more. Better still, ask your doctor to check your blood pressure.
If you run with those scissors,
it's the least you can do.
Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show. America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the second hour of the Guy James Show. We will be having Congressman Steve Kagan from Wisconsin join us here shortly. You know how that goes in the Capitol building. You never know where you're going to get called for a vote, and so very often when you have folks from the United States Congress on, not exactly when you plan on it. So unless it's after a session, in which case during our show, we're almost always during a session of Congress. So of the House today. So we'll see. We'll see what happens here in a moment or two, and we'll go to Congressman Kagan as soon as he calls in. We will do that today. How many of you saw this? Wanted to bring this up, and I was reminded about it by John, one of our faithful listeners. John, thank you. About Obama being called the wrong name. Senator Obama quickly corrected a slip-up about his name Monday at the Associated Press annual luncheon in Washington, D.C. You would think people would be a little bit careful. Dean Singleton, board chair of the Associated Press and a longtime newspaper executive, asked Obama about the possibility of shifting troops into Afghanistan to fight against the al-Qaeda leader. And he said, can you imagine shifting a substantial number of Afghanistan a substantial number to Afghanistan, where the Taliban has been gaining strength and Obama bin Laden is still at large, Singleton asked. And it's quite clear that Obama was agitated and quickly interrupted him. I think that was Osama bin Laden, the Democratic candidate said, and then he took a big gulp of water from the glass next to the podium. And Singleton quickly apologized, and he said, if I did that, I'm so sorry. And Obama said, no, this is part of the exercises that I've been going through over the past 15 months, which is why it's pretty impressive that I'm standing here. And the audience applauded Obama's quick retort, and that was a great comeback, very, very quick. After the event, an embarrassed Singleton could be heard off camera, but on microphone, telling an unidentified man, can't believe I did that. I didn't think I did, but he said so, so I assumed I did, so certainly wasn't on purpose. Oh, boy. Wouldn't you just want to crawl in a hole if you did something like that? I mean, everybody makes mistakes, but wow. I see the stock market's up 256 points today. 256 points. Another big day on Wall Street. Another day, once again, like we talked about earlier in the program today, another day when the big disconnect between the haves and the have-nots shows itself in spades. The people playing the market today had a big day, and the people working at Walmart did not. People on the market made a big pile of money. Most people did not. We're going to pause very, very quickly for a very quick break, and we'll be back in just a moment to have the congressman on.
Here's the guy changing the way you hear music, Billy Shears.
Night Sounds every Saturday night, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern. You'll hear the latest in new music releases, special segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications with the sassy and classy Erica Richards. For requests and dedications, direct your email to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. So tune in and stop by the chat room this Saturday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
And as promised right now, we have on the line Representative Steve Kagan of Wisconsin. Congressman, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you, guys. Good to be with you.
I understand you're on your way over to the House for a vote. We've explained to our listeners what that's like for you there. You never know for sure when you're talking to somebody.
It's a great exercise. I get about 5 miles in per day going back and forth, and it's always something critical to the nation's future.
What's the vote about today?
This one will be about the Jubilee, and we're going to pass a bill to encourage the Jubilee.
We wanted to talk to you briefly, and I know you don't have much time since you're headed for a vote, but we wanted to talk to you briefly about health care. You know that the American public is kind of fed up over this whole thing, and you know there hasn't been a whole lot accomplished We've made some inroads into it, but what do you think for the future with our Democratic Congress? And we're going to take some more seats this year. Do you think we'll be able to get something very meaningful done?
Absolutely, we will. But the goal that I have is I'm working with John Conyers and John Dingell, chairman of various committees, to put down legislation right now so that we're ready to go when we get a president who will sign a bill instead of vetoing it. And I think we have to begin by ending the discrimination in health care.
Well, we will get a president that will sign a bill. Of that, I think we can be absolutely sure.
I put up a bill that your listeners may be interested in. It restores community-based ratings. Right now, if you have a medical condition, a pre-existing condition, an insurance company can discriminate against you because of that condition. And I think that's just plain wrong. In fact, our Constitution protects us against discrimination unless you get sick.
Well, we all know about the pre-existing condition. It's certainly shut a lot of people out of health care in this country. I don't know what the numbers are, but it's a tremendous number of people that are shut out.
Well, it's millions. I got to tell you that if we get our act together here in Congress and finally put discrimination where it belongs in the past, it'll be a great thing.
As far as...
Still on the clock. That's even better.
You're not having to run this... you are running right now again, right?
Well, you're running across the street. I'm running across the street. But every 2 years, we're elected to the United States House of Representatives, and I am up for re-election again. I am a physician. I'm one of the new doctors in the House. There are nine of us here. And
but you've been at being a physician for a long time.
Well, I've been a physician for 30 years, caring for people and putting them back together. People trusted me with the lives of their children and with themselves, and now they trust me to guide the country towards a more positive future. But more to the point on health care, we have to get to the point in America where health care is affordable. The costs for everybody today are simply impossible. If you're out of luck and don't have work, you're out of insurance as well, because you can't afford $14,000 a year annually for insurance coverage. And more today, Guy, if you have insurance, all it guarantees is that the insurance company will take your money and then you have to fight like hell to get it back because it doesn't cover things or it has a deductible or you have co-pays that are increasingly larger and larger. So I just put it simply by saying, look, if you're a citizen, you should be in the risk pool. No one should be able to say no to you if you're a citizen. And secondly, if it's in your body, it should be covered, including mental and dental.
Well, I've always said if there's one thing we owe each other as a civil society, it is decent health care, and we've not done nearly enough about it. And I certainly hope our new Congress can with our new president when it comes around. I think we're going to have a few more seats, and we're definitely going to have a president that'll help you out on it this time.
Absolutely. Guy, I've got to run and put my vote in. I certainly appreciate the opportunity of speaking with you, and I look forward to speaking with you and listening to your listeners' questions at a later time.
Hey, thanks very much. Good luck.
Take care.
It is funny. Have you been to the Capitol building when they're taking a vote? There's people running everywhere, and he's not kidding about running across the street. They announced that there's going to be a vote, and boom, down the halls they go. It's quite a sight to see. It really is, and it's the same thing with the Senate, the little railroad that runs underneath the Capitol building. They come over from the Hart building and the various buildings. There's, what, three Senate buildings, and they get on that little train and ride over there and get to the Capitol quick for a vote. When you watch that on C-SPAN sometimes, you see them walking in from the cloakroom in the back there, just boom, and they end up coming in and casting a vote and sometimes walking right back on out again. It's a busy place. When we sit and castigate congressmen and all that, we don't mean to imply that many of them aren't very, very busy, because they are. And I'm especially happy that we're getting more people from the healthcare business, I might as well say, physicians, in the Congress. I think it's important because those people know exactly what it is that has to get done. And so it's good to talk to the congressman. We caught him at a bad time today heading on over for a vote. Anyway, we'll try and do a better job of scheduling that a little later on. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254 is the number if you'd like to give us a call today. We started to talk before the break about how all your tax dollars are spent. And now that everybody's paid their taxes for the year, I thought we should discuss how well the Bush administration is spending those hard-earned dollars of yours. And so let's take a look, shall we? Most tax dollars are spent on the military, of course. Out of every tax dollar you send your dear, precious Uncle Sam, 42.2 cents goes to the military to pay for wars and the fancy weapons programs and to care for our wounded Marines and soldiers and airmen and sailors. 22.1% goes to the health care initiatives like Medicare and Medicaid and a couple of cents toward children's health care as well. 10.2 cents out of every one of your tax dollar goes toward non-military debt to pay down the national debt that we don't hear much about during a Republican administration that always seems to run it up by quite a bit. The last few have, for sure. 8.7 cents out of every one of your tax dollar funds anti-poverty programs like welfare, food stamps, and shelters. And to hear the right talk about it, it's half your money, but there you go. It's only 8.7 cents to take care of the disadvantaged and help feed people and shelter people in this country. 4.4 cents out of every one of your tax dollars supposedly gets spent on education, where it's promptly turned into administrator salaries and profits for the big companies who print your standardized testing materials like Neil Bush's company. 3.9% underwrites the cost of governmental services from the courts and justice systems to the lifetime benefits our elected officials receive, but would never have the rest of us have if the Republicans have their way. 3.3% pays the bills for any projects related to affordable housing and community development. Most of this is used to buy poisonous FEMA trailers from some corporation tied to the current administration. 2.6% is spent to promote and explore the wonders of science and space, the future of cleaner, renewable energy, and to protect the environment. And 1.5 cents out of every dollar is for agriculture and transportation, half to farmers to keep them from planting certain crops, and half to people who can't seem to make a road that lasts more than a season or two. And finally, 1 cent out of every one of your tax dollars gets sent abroad in the form of foreign aid, but only to countries who promote abstinence, fight terrorists, or lend us lots of money. This is the massive amount of money you're always hearing from the right-wingers. Oh, my God, we're going to cut off the foreign aid to these people. Well, it wouldn't be a hell of a lot, believe me. I think we're something like 17th on the list, maybe farther down than that, per capita on our giving in foreign aid to other countries. And as you can see, this adds up to only 99.9 cents on the dollar if you add that all up. And I don't know where that other tenth of a cent is going, but I'll tell you this much. One tenth of a cent of all of our tax dollars amounts to a hell of a lot of money. But truth be told, I would be willing to give it all to Junior Bush and his entire family if they just packed their belongings and moved to where was it in South America where they bought all that? Paraguay? I think it's Paraguay where they bought all that land and just promises never to be heard from again. It would be worth it to me. You're listening to the Guy James Show here in the Head On Network, Head On Radio Network. We're live today. I thought you might be interested in hearing about some of the tax breaks in this housing bill. You know how Congress always throws something, they get something going and they tell the public, well, we're going to do this and we're going to do that, and then we find out that something's been tagged on to it. Well, supposedly right now they're talking about, and we've got a big differentiation between the House bill and the Senate bill that they're talking about. There's been a, according to the Senate anyway, that they've had this fierce bipartisan fight, and they finally agreed to help the American homeowners that are in danger of having their homes foreclosed. But the senators approved this bill last week that really doesn't take many steps toward that end, and it would give as always, billions of dollars in tax breaks for big companies. Once again, they're talking about helping out with foreclosure, but tagged onto it is billions of dollars in tax breaks for industry, home builders, automakers, and airline companies and others. And this is named the Foreclosure Prevention Act in the Senate. And what it boils down to is a bunch of handouts, as always, to big business. And it, it's business as usual. It also shows you how powerful the lobbyists are, how much power they have in the halls of Congress. In the Senate bill, and some of this reports from the New York Times, in the Senate bill, the nation's biggest home builders, some of them now on the verge of bankruptcy, got their lobbyists to go in and win a provision that would let them claim millions in tax refunds, get this, by charging their current losses against the huge profits they made 3 or 4 years ago. Now, I could be wrong, and as I said before today, I'm not an economist, I'm not a CPA. But tell me, if you have a chance, let's say you have made $100,000 a year 4 years ago and passed that, and you lose your ass this year, are you allowed to reclaim the taxes you paid on your $100,000 a year? That's what they're doing for the businesses here. That's what they're doing. They're charging their current losses against the profits they made 3 or 4 years ago. Can you do that? Well, let me answer that for you. I don't think you can. But then again, you're not hiring a lobbyist to go in and talk to your senator, are you? Of course you aren't. The guy ahead of the National Association of Home Builders, Jerry Howard, he said, "This is our biggest legislative effort since the Tax Reform Act of 1986. Hundreds of the association members flooded the district offices of representatives and senators while they were home for the spring recess last month." And we have builders across this country that made fortunes during this boom. Just made absolute fortunes. But as we've said before, when it comes down to it, what big business usually succeeds in doing is privatizing the profits and socializing the losses. And once again, they have done it. The right wing can sit and talk about socialism all they want to. What better example of socialism can you have than this? It's not even decent socialism because it's not for everybody. It's for big business, but not for you, not for society on the whole. The businesses get tax breaks that you cannot get. They can pay the dividends. The stockholders make their money. The CEOs make their money. But you, my friend, if you have a problem with your home getting foreclosed, well, there's not a whole lot going to happen. And even Senator Dodd, Democrat of Connecticut and the main author of the Senate bill, said the measure doesn't live up to its name and he wants some changes in it. But other lawmakers and the lobbyists who seek to influence them also recognize the golden opportunity when they see it, and the political winds virtually guarantee a bill's passage, and the housing crisis is just such time. And some of the names are so familiar to me. Maybe they are in your area as well, because we had that building boom here in Southwest Florida, and I know in Phoenix, and I know in Las Vegas, and a few other areas of the country. But big companies like KB Homes and Toll Brothers, they formed a coalition and hired a lobbying firm, the C2 Group, apart from the National Association of Home Builders. And Tom Crawford, the founder of the C2 Group, met with the staff members of the Senate Finance Committee, several of whose members had already begun expressing concern about the effect of the slowing economy on home builders and other business. And they weren't the only industry that was involved either. Like I mentioned, the airlines, the automotive industry. Now, I understand perfectly that we have to have a strong business community in this country. I think everybody understands that. We can't have every company in the United States going broke. That won't work. But there's got to be a better way than letting them run hog wild when things are good, and then when things get bad, they get bailed out. There's got to be a better way. When they're paying these obscene profits out, when they're paying these obscene salaries to the CEOs and the board members of companies and the major stockholders in these companies, maybe they shouldn't be paying out quite so much and being saving up for a rainy day. But no, when the rainy day comes, hey, Uncle Sam, we need some help. Help us first, not the people who are losing the homes that we built for them. Help us first. Now, the House bill is much better. Charlie Rangel has, they put up a bill that includes a tax credit up to $7,500 for purchasers of foreclosed properties. And they're providing a tax credit for first-time home buyers and the National Association of Realtors, naturally, is all for that. So, at least it's better than the Senate version of it. But I don't have high hopes for any of it, to tell you the truth. The people, once again, who are the neediest in this whole thing, are going to get left out of it, I'm afraid. And that's the way it is, as Walter Cronkite used to say. 866-546-5254 if you'd like to join the program. I wanted to briefly talk about this Osama bin Laden story. That seems to have happened many times where people have misidentified Barack Obama. And I don't know whether it's just a slip of the tongue. I don't know whether... I'm sure this one the other night at the newspaper soiree wasn't intentional. But it's happened, and I just wonder if it's not happening because some of the talk show hosts and your Mike Savages and people like that have done it on purpose. I just wonder if they've planted the seed in people's mind to do that. It could well be. It could well be. But so much has been made of the speech that he gave that was supposed to be off the record, and I'm fine with the fact that it is on the record. If you go out in public and say something, I'm not crazy about off the record stuff. But he talked about people being bitter, and damn right they're bitter. When workers in North Carolina and West Virginia and Pennsylvania and Ohio and Michigan and other states end up shopping at Walmart because they've run everybody else out of business and then filled their stores up with cheap Chinese crap at lower prices, it makes one bitter. It makes them bitter when they have to go out and buy a pair of pants that they used to manufacture themselves, but then had their job sent overseas because of dirt cheap labor. And it makes a person bitter when the price of gas and groceries are going sky high, but their pay at McDonald's and their other job down at the Korean-owned fabricating plant aren't keeping pace. Bitter? You bet people are bitter. It makes a person bitter when a parent can't even afford to buy the cheap Chinese clothes from Walmarts these days so their kids can be dressed decently for school. And it makes a whole family bitter when they're eating potatoes and beans and macaroni and cheese every meal instead of a good, balanced, wholesome diet. Families who used to go out and eat once a week or go to a movie or a baseball game can't do that now. And those businesses are suffering. Families that used to go for a drive with the kids can't afford the gas now. Homes that used to be kept at 74 degrees in the wintertime are now kept at 60 because of the price of the heating oil. It's not a luxury. And people are bitter, you know, when the bank calls and said, oh, you're behind on the mortgage that they've paid on for years and years, and they just can't keep up anymore. Laying awake at night and wondering if you can afford to keep a roof over your kid's head. That makes a person bitter. And when politicians make promises about health care that they don't keep, that makes people bitter. And when they promise to end a needless war, which has cost the life of someone in your community, you get bitter and you get more disillusioned. And I'm not buying the story that Middle America isn't bitter. I'm not buying it at all. Because I think Middle America and many of those families are bitter. And it's not selfishness. It's not, oh, woe is me. It's not, I'm the only one, gimme, gimme, gimme. It's not as the right would have you think. It's because these people have been downtrodden. Every one of you knows people that have lost their job or lost their home or taken a huge cut in pay. Every one of you goes to the grocery store and sees the huge increase in groceries. Every one of you sees the increase in your electric bill and your phone bill. And oh my God, the gas money that you put in your gas tank now just to go to work and back. How many of you have cut down on the driving you do? How many of you think about even starting your car up anymore when you don't have to? Now I understand that we shouldn't be wasting precious natural resources like oil. But people are suffering because of this. They are suffering. And when there's suffering, there is bitterness. There is bitterness when you're in a position that you haven't caused and you can't do anything about. You're damn right there's bitterness. Don't anybody tell me that Barack Obama was wrong when he said people are bitter, because they are. So many people I know, and I know so many people that you know, You've eliminated all the luxuries out of your life. You think twice when you pick up that good item at the grocery store and you go for the store brand instead. You don't go out and buy that ice cream cone. You don't do this. You don't do that. And there's a hell of a lot of small businesses suffering because of that. It's absurd to say that American voters aren't bitter, because they are. And I just want to couple that with the fact that I hope these people have the good sense to vote in their self-interest this time and throw these bums out that have helped cause this. Oil was what, 37? And I'm not going to put all the blame for the oil crisis on George Bush. I won't do that. But if you'll remember, this is a man that bragged to the American public before he got in, and when he was running for office, that he was the first NBA president, and that he and Dickie Cheney had influence with their friends over in the Middle East, and how they'd be able to help us out with this and that, and he could cajole the Saudis. He went over and talked to the Saudis recently about the price of oil, how they maybe increase production and help out the price, and therefore help out the American economy. And you know what they told him? They told him to get lost. That's what they told him. And in the meantime, knowing all this is devastating the American economy, what meaningful steps have been taken by this administration to take us off of this path of being so oil dependent? Have there been any meaningful steps taken? I would argue that there has not. Because the main argument that comes from the right day in and day out on this problem, on this peak oil situation, and on our environmental problems is it doesn't exist. Had one of our listeners assure me recently that there's more oil in the Gulf of Mexico than all the places in the Middle East combined. Well, when you get one out of 1,000 oil explorers telling you that, I'd look at that kind of suspect. But there's just a whole lot of this that doesn't make sense to the American public. It doesn't make sense to me. But it does make sense when you get your paycheck, and it keeps getting smaller and smaller and smaller because of your expenses going higher and higher, and we've got inflation on top of that now, you've got an ugly situation, and you've got a lot of Americans that are bitter, that are fed up. And so we are about to find out in the next few months, will the American public wise up, or will voters shock us once again and put McBush in the White House? John Sidney McCain. Might as well say McBush because that's what it is. If the American public puts that man in the White House with his like mind, like Junior Bush, it's going to be hard for me, for one, to maintain my faith in the wisdom of the American people. I forget who it was that said it. I think it was Winston Churchill. I'm pretty sure it was Winston Churchill that said Americans always end up doing the right thing after they've tried everything else. And I just hope and pray we're not in a situation like that again. Country's divided over it. And there's got to be a solution found, and soon. Speaking of divided, I've found this woman talking about taxes, a right-wing, hardcore right-wing group. And if you think there's not a division in this country, listen to this.
Here, I want to show you across the country where we have seen climate change initiatives that are taking place under the governors in the states. There's no federal carbon cap and trade system right now, and the governors have gone around the state legislatures and they've established under executive order agreements with the different states to set up a cap and trade within those regions. Now, here's the interesting thing to note. The Northwest and the Northeast, fundamentally powered by hydropower or by nuclear power, want to trade credits with the South where it's coal. So yet again, the South has to pay on its back the cost of using coal in this country to the northern states. We're going to have another civil war here in a short period of time because the cost is going to go up. So this is all, so the Southeast has not bought into this because they understand that they're going to have to pay a very high price. Maryland has decided to sort of stay out of it because they have coal, as is Pennsylvania. They don't necessarily want to pay Yankee taxes, right? So
Yankee taxes. Wow, didn't some of this stuff, didn't it sound like things that were being talked about in the country back around 1858, 59, right in there somewhere, and for a good bit before that? Yankee taxes. I found that interesting. Yankee taxes. It amazes me when people in places of authority and people in these right-wing think tanks take it for granted that the rest of us are willing to tell all the rest of society just to go to hell. We don't care about your problems. We don't care if parts of America freeze to death. We don't care. It just fascinates me that they assume that we're like that too. Don't want to pay the Yankee taxes. Interesting. Very interesting. My friend Robert Greenwald's got a new ad out. And you'll start seeing, I think you'll see it on the network tonight after the debate. Robert's group is called Brave New Films. And Robert's a friend of mine. He's a genius. And he always makes great films. But he did this ad tonight. It's going to be on, I'm sure, right after the debate or during the... after the debate. And it's called Condi Must Go. Because of her acquiescence to the people that wanted to do torture and just said, hey, it's your baby, go ahead with it. Yeah, she is that cold-hearted of a woman. Just wanted to play the audio from it, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes.
The United States doesn't and can't condone torture.
A major news outlet reported that the president's top advisors personally approved specific interrogation methods.
Top secret meetings were held in the White House.
It was a torture program and approved at the very highest level.
Rice personally told the CIA, this is your baby, go do it.
Torture and conspiracy to commit torture are crimes under U.S. law.
Last quarter hour of the Guy James Show today, coming to you live from beautiful Southwest Florida, land of the blue waters and sandy beaches. Yes, indeed. nice day here. A little cool today. It's in the 70s, but back in the 80s tomorrow. Actually, got down rather chilly tonight, last night, around under 50 degrees some places, which is pretty freaky this time of year for this area. It really is. It's fun to watch how the native Floridians, the crackers, we call them, lovingly, how they get so cold. Gets down this cold. Oh, no, it's cold. You can tell who the former Northerners are. They're all walking around in shirt sleeves and everybody else got their sweaters on. You know, we talked yesterday with Patrick Coburn that wrote the book Muqtada. And we mentioned it. And I saw an article in ABC News. We were talking yesterday about whether or not these militias in Iraq are the ones, actually, they're like the Salvation Army here in America. They're the ones that are passing out help and aid to the people, not the government. And so many of the people are dependent solely upon these militias for help. So it's no wonder that people are sympathetic to the militias and join them. The sectarian militias are really increasing their profile in Iraq, and they're recruiting lots of new members by giving assistance to families that have been thrown out of their homes, clothing, food, oil, electricity, money. And, of course, when you help people out with that, they're going to feel a certain allegiance to you, a certain loyalty to you, and that is how some of the militias are recruiting new people. And Muqtada al-Sadr is really emerging as the unofficial humanitarian group, his group is. And as we said yesterday, this ABC report, they're comparing the Sadr's movement to the terrorist group Hezbollah in the Middle East because it's established itself as a primary service provider in several of the Iraqi cities. So who's surprised by that? Should anybody be surprised by that, that if somebody's helping to feed you and clothe you and providing heating oil and gas and maybe even jobs for you, you're gonna lean their way. And so that further points out the utter exasperation of the U.S. military and the problem that they're going to have trying to reach any kind of a goal of a steady, dependable government there. A lasting peace of any kind when you've got these militias having a tug of war with the citizens, over the citizens of Iraq. And of course, yesterday we had another horrible day in Iraq where there was 54 people killed. And what more of a reminder do you need that the American and the Iraqi forces are still fighting a war in this occupation of ours. And you've got the militaries battling the Shiite militias down in Basra and in Baghdad. And the two worst attacks that happened on Tuesday occurred in cities to the north and to the west. And these are places that General Petraeus, if you remember, said that they'd taken back from the Sunni insurgents. And do remember, when you read about these tragedies that take place in Iraq, Anbar province and all that, where he says, oh, yeah, we've just made great strides and things are pretty good. He did say that any progress that had been made was, in his words, fragile and reversible. That's called CYA. That's called covering your ass, because he knows. He knows. Fragile and reversible. I think in the past, yesterday, we found out just how fragile and reversible this all is. In the first attack in Baquba, over in the capital of the Diyala province, 40 people died in a suicide car bombing. And actually, the emergency workers that removed the bodies said it was 53. And over in Ramadi, the capital of Anbar province, west of Baghdad, a suicide bomber struck a restaurant, killing 13 people. And also in Mosul, they had 12 people wounded, and there was another person killed in Baghdad, and 8 were wounded. So this is reversible. This is fragile. If there is anything to reverse, and I look with a jaundiced eye toward the entire testimony of General Petraeus and Ambassador Crocker. And I realize that maybe they are honorable men. I don't want to say they're not, but I also know who they're working for. And I also know what they were expected to say. And I also know that if they hadn't been going to say what they said, they would not have been invited to talk in front of Congress, that Bush would have kept them both in Iraq and they wouldn't have got over here to testify. You know that. But it's an ugly situation. And they're still setting off these bombs. And it's a horrible, horrible scene over there. The one in Baqaba, for example, the dead included 12 children and 18 women, and 70 people were wounded, about half of them severely. And most of the people were casualties from the cars of the people on the street who were burned alive, people who were innocent. A doctor who supervises the morgue at the Baqaba Hospital described a scene of horror. Half of the bodies brought to him were completely burned. A minibus was incinerated with the people still sitting in the seats. And he said some of the bodies that came to the hospital were, let's say, not bodies, but only a hand or a torso. And if you listen to the Bush administration, they would almost have you believe that these sorts of things aren't even happening anymore. We've made all this great progress. We built all these new schools. We built all these new hospitals. And then we've got an Iraqi public that's walking around happy. They've got jobs and they've got everything they need now. If you listen to the Bush administration, that is what they would have you believe. And it's probably old news to push to talk about the Bush administration, but what I'm aiming at here is to let you know that we've got a guy running for the office of President of the United States that's nothing more than another Junior Bush, and if he gets into office a year from now, we'll be saying the same thing we're saying right now. Because this man, there's no ifs, ands, or buts. This man will continue this war the way it's being fought right now, this occupation of Iraq. He will continue it. He will keep it going. He's not adverse to being in Iraq at all, from what I can tell. And all the propaganda that took place, you heard him say on the program the other night, some of the Iraqi soldiers that fought, it was a little disappointing. I think that's the way he put it. Or they didn't fight very well, or most of them did. Well, we had another incident yesterday in the streets of Baghdad. There was a whole company of Iraqi soldiers who just ran away from their positions on Tuesday night in Sadr City. And here we had the American soldiers were running after them, hey, come on back here, you've got to guard this crucial stretch of road that led to a series of intense exchanges between American soldiers and about 50 Iraqi troops who were running away from it. And not only that, but the man in charge of them was a major, an Iraqi major. He was leading his troops away from the Sadr City fight. And here we have an American captain pleading with him, don't do this. He said, the American captain said, if you turn around and go back up the street, these soldiers will follow you. If you tuck tail and cowardly run away, they'll follow you up that way too. Well, he did tuck tail and run. Is this worth American soldiers losing their lives over? I don't think it is. How would you like to be an American soldier sitting in Baghdad and you see somebody in uniform, an Iraqi uniform next to you, and you don't really know if he's an Iraqi soldier, if he's part of the Mahdi army? You don't really know. You don't know whether he's going to take that uniform and run on over to the militia side at any moment. You don't know. How would you like to be an American soldier, American military personnel, be in that situation? And it's just terrible. You read. Let me read you a quote. You said, it bugs the hell out of me, said Sergeant George Lewis, Captain Vice Platoon Sergeant in Company B, 3rd Platoon, 1st Battalion, 14th Infantry Regiment. He said, and let me quote, "We don't see any progress being made at all." Now, this is a man that's in the thick of us. This is not the general that's in the high office someplace with the air conditioning and so forth. This is a man who's got a rifle, who is out in the streets of Sadr City, and he says, "We don't see any progress being made at all. We hear these guys in firefights. We know if we're not up there helping these guys out, we're making very little progress." End quote. Seems to me that conflicts just a bit of what his commander said. That every house in Sadr City probably has one of his sons in the Mahdi army. So it's hard to convince people to believe in the Iraqi army. It's a situation where we have 81% of the American people against this. 81% of the American people think it was a mistake. And when we have a situation like that, and Bush can say all he wants to about how I don't rule. He might as well use the word rule by polls. I don't govern by polls. I don't make my decision because of polls. If you know that if you're in a leadership position and you know that 81% of the American people are against something, by God, you better be against it too. You owe that to the American people. You owe that to be representative of the will of the people of the United States of America. That's who you're representing of the president. You're not the king. You're there to represent the will of the people. Not just the fat cats of the military-industrial complex. Not just the Dick Cheney and the Richard Pearls and the Paul Wolfowitzes of the world. And the Douglas Feiss. Not those people. You're there representing the people out here all across this, as they say, the fruited plain from coast to coast. From sea to shining sea and all that good stuff. You're not the king, George Bush. And yet you can turn your back on 81% of the American people. Say, you know, I really don't care what you think. And as Dick Cheney said, so. I know the American people don't want us to be there. So what? I don't care. Well, that's the mess we're in. We'll talk about it some more tomorrow, I'm sure. And I do want to thank all of you for being with us today here on the Guy James Show and the Head On Radio Network. I want to say a special thank you to Mary Carlson. Mary, thank you very much. She's from up Pennsylvania way. And it's very, very good to hear from you, and I thank you very much. And it's good to hear from all of you, all of our friends that regularly send me emails and so forth. I enjoy each and every one of them. Thanks for joining us today here on the Guy James Show. Don't forget, this is a listener-supported program. We depend on your help to keep it going. Thanks so much. Thanks to Billy Shears, our music director. Don't forget, you heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. Later, gang.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. The Iraqi war is now more than 5 years old, a longer war than World War II, a longer war than the American Civil War. And yet, much like America's longest war, the war in Vietnam, it is still unclear even today who we're fighting. Saddam Hussein is gone. Al-Qaeda, that is Osama bin Laden's Al-Qaeda, was never there. There's a very small copycat operation going on, but that's not even our main enemy. Is it Shiite death squads or Sunni terrorists, or is it Iran, or is it the Iraqi government itself? Much like Vietnam, it's unclear who we're fighting or what we're fighting for. Well, there's a general who was Secretary of State under George W. Bush, And Colin Powell, he kind of cut his teeth on Vietnam. In fact, he even developed a doctrine to make sure that Vietnam would never happen again. And yet, here we are again. And the chief of staff to Colin Powell during that era was Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson. I have Colonel Wilkerson on the line to talk about both where we came from and where we go from here. Colonel, welcome to the Inside Scoop. Welcome. Let me ask you, first of all, how you got with Colin Powell to begin with. Did you work for him or with him prior to this administration?
Yes, I joined him in January of 1989, actually, and was with him pretty much for the years since.
So you were with him as in 1999. What was he doing then? I don't even know.
Well, it was 1989.
1989. Okay.
You're making
he was chairman
me
of the Joint
old.
Chiefs of Staff. That's okay. He was chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff then. And before
he came out of the Reagan White House on January the 20th, 1989, interviewed me on January the 25th, 1989, and I joined him as he put on his four-star and became commander of the United States Army Forces Command in Atlanta, Georgia.
Before we get to the specifics of the Iraq War, and we will definitely go there, I'd like you to just describe in general what you think of Colin Powell.
Well, I thought from the moment I met him, I thought he was a very unique individual. For example, he didn't talk like your average Army general. He was a lot smarter, and that's not meant to be derisive or a pejorative. It's just to say that Colin Powell's a pretty smart guy. The second thing that struck me about him was that he listened to you.